No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the initial show of the newly renamed Rise Up Sea Red podcast. This is our first show under the new name, which is simply a continuation. It's the same podcast as before. Revenge of the Birds has changed. Revenge of the Birds Radio is now Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root. Now from Cards Wire, one of the new USA Today Sports NFL Wire sites. And on the line with me tonight is Seth Cox, who at the moment is taking the job that I once had at Revenge of the Birds, and he's waiting for final confirmation of that. But I'm Jess Root of Cards Wire, and that's Seth Cox of RevengeOfTheBirds.com and the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast as well. Seth, how you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
Doing great. You know, we both saw a little bit of change, and now this has become a collaboration of two different sites, the two actual, you know, competing Cardinal sites. But since you and I are friends, it's not, and the way we've always seen it, there's clicks for everybody. So,
yeah, I mean, there's a ton of ways for Cardinals fans to digest their information. And I think that will, you know, there's plenty of room for both to flourish and, mostly to just, you know, really build the Cardinals fan base, continue to build the Cardinals fan base. As, you know, we talked about on the, you know, pre-show, you know, the biggest thing being, can we see, continue to see the growth in the Arizona Cardinals fan base and numbers? And I know that clicks on articles don't tell the whole story of a fan base. But one of the things that you love to see is a fan base hungry and ravenous for information on their team. And so, you know, as you know, and as I'm finding out, you know, it's much more difficult as a Cardinals fan. So the more information we can get out there, I honestly think the better. So I'm happy for you. Congratulations and good luck.
And hopefully a congratulations to you is coming very soon as well. So this is show number 120 of the podcast that we've been running now for the last 3 years. But again, this is number one under the new name. Again, the new name is Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. And so we have a couple of places you can find us, revengeofthebirds.com. You can find us on Blog Talk Radio. You can find us on Twitter. The new Twitter handle is at Rise Up Sea Red, pretty easy. And on Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red. And it will also be featured on cardswire.usatoday.com. Tonight, we're in the middle of the off season. Had a couple of hangups with potential interviews with a couple of players. I had hoped to get Eli Buka, one of the undrafted guys that come the really elitely athletic guy out of Canada. That fell through. And so we're going to talk about some topics. As they'll probably be the one show we have right up until right before training camp. We're still about a month away. We're going to talk about four things. One is the off season. We've had a couple of stories come up as the all or nothing Amazon video series is coming out. And so the Cardinals have kind of been the talk of the NFL in some way or another. We learn as Bruce Arians just appeared on HBO's Real Sports, what exactly happened there in Pittsburgh when he was let go. So we're going to talk a little bit about the story that came out between Arians and Tomlin and then everything that happened there. We're going to talk about Jake Long. We've already sort of addressed the idea of a veteran right tackle, a veteran cornerback. But we're going to focus on one guy who just said that he is back and he's ready to play in the NFL. So we'll talk about him and whether he's a fit for the Cardinals and if there's anyone else who's better on the offensive line. The top 100, the NFL top 100 players of 2016 continues from NFL Network. And today, Wednesday is when we're recording. Two more Cardinals were, in fact, recognized. Tyrann Mathieu came in at number 28. and Larry Fitzgerald at number 27, giving the Cardinals 4. And so we're going to talk about those things and who's left. Who's left of the top 100? And specifically, we're going to talk about Carson Palmer. And then each of us is going to give, as we're starting to see these pop up around the internet, we're going to give our way too early, you know, the pre-training camp 53-man roster predictions. So let's go ahead and get underway. Let's go ahead and start talking about the Bruce Arians and Mike Tomlin thing. Now, initially there was the trailer for the HBO Real Sports episode came out the other day, a couple of minutes, and you get Bruce Arians opening up about his letting go, and you got a couple of different things. And first, the story goes, Mike Tomlin tells Arians after 2012, say, hey, you know, I'm going to get you your bread, is what he says. Basically, he's going to get your money, he's going to get your contract extension raise. And Arians said, okay, I'm going to be on the lake, and he got a call Monday. Finds out that Tomlin tells him not only could he not get him the money, he couldn't get him a contract. That's the way he told it. So there was sort of the initial reaction was, oh, the ownership, the front office didn't want Arians back. Talking about, you know, the relationship he had with Ben Roethlisberger, the style of offense just didn't fit the Steelers. But then Arians' wife is on there, said, talking about how much she admired Mike Tomlin and believed that he was a guy who took care of his and cared about his coaches, his people, and to have him do what he did, she was left disillusioned. And the money quote from Arians is, you know, after getting off the phone, I went upstairs, told my wife, but I've never seen my wife cry, and she cried. Kind of telling the story, so hey, that guy made my wife cry, so I'm mad. Now, what was your initial reactions? I didn't think so much about it, especially because he said time heals all wounds, and once Chuck Pagano called, everything changed, and that sort of began a chain of events that led to his success here in Arizona. But what was your initial reaction when you heard or ran across that promo?
I think it was partially like, well, we saw this coming because the entire Steelers like base seemed unhappy with Arians and what he was doing. So, you know, I never bought that it was the management like decision. I thought it was a co-decision between Tomlin and management. So, the thing I never bought, I should have said, was that he was too close to Ben Roethlisberger and blah, blah, blah. I never bought that part of it. But I did, you know, think that it was interesting that it became an ordeal, basically. I mean, isn't that what it became? It became an ordeal that this was more than just the average firing. This was, you know, kind of a backstabbing and kind of conniving, it seemed like, and disingenuous by Mike Tomlin. And I, it's almost like because of who Bruce Arians is now and how much everybody loves him, that they needed a villain for the story. And the villain cannot be the Rooneys in terms of the NFL storyline. So the next logical choice was Mike Tomlin. And, you know, I'm not saying that to be mean, you know, or disregard Arians, but does he still really want to be the Steelers offensive coordinator? I mean, you know,
no, he doesn't at the time he didn't. And he said that, you know, that change that call from Pagano changed everything and kind of changed everything, changed the course of his career. But at the time, I mean, that was a big deal because he's a guy that's from Pennsylvania.
He wanted to be the Steelers head coach. I think that's where the problem came, is that he was still probably pretty bitter that he didn't get the coaching job after Cowher quit. And now this was just the final, like, it's a realization that it's never going to happen. You know, maybe it does, but I mean, I doubt that between what he has in Arizona and what the Steelers are, I doubt that we'll see him in Pittsburgh ever again. But I think that's what it kind of was, is it was the realization that he could never realize his dream of being the Pittsburgh Steelers head coach once he was no longer employed by the Steelers, because, you know, it just wasn't going to work out that way.
Well, and you know, as a coordinator, I think he ran into almost the sort of, remember how Ray Horton, his departure happened. He looked like he thought he was going to get the job. And then there was this, you know, this reported yelling match with him and someone in the, you know, in the front office. He was the next hot candidate for head coach, and he's still just a defensive coordinator. In fact, he went with Wisenhunt and then was undercut a little bit by them taking on Dick LeBeau. Dick LeBeau took over the defense, and now he's back in Cleveland now, where he spent a year. It's really interesting. And maybe that's simply it, because of the prominence of Arians now, that this sort of story is a bigger deal. Because during the season, I mean, it wasn't a deal. In fact, Arians downplayed his departure from Pittsburgh completely. When they played in Pittsburgh, it was no big deal. They didn't want him. He didn't want to make it about him. But then suddenly in this offseason, now, you know, he's sort of the star of the NFL. He's like the prominent coach. He's the most interesting coach, the most popular coach in the NFL right now, you know, because he's different. He's, you know, the Cardinals are a hot commodity. He speaks his mind. Maybe this is the sort of thing that happens with assistant coaches all the time. You wouldn't think so. Whether it was Tomlin's fault that essentially he, you know, lied to Arians and saying he was going to get him his money, and he never really had any intentions of retaining him, because it wasn't technically a firing. Honestly, it wasn't technically
no. It was just a non-renewal.
They didn't renew. They didn't give him a new contract. Yeah, so exactly. that is embellishment on part of Arians, but they just decided not to renew his contract. Or maybe it was a case that he was talked into it, or maybe the Rooneys said, okay, no, we don't want him back. And so you can either make changes to your staff, or we're going to go a different direction ourselves. But the interesting thing is when Andrew Kramer actually called the Steelers organization and they just put it all on Tomlin, which technically they could still do, even if they said, all right, Mike, Arian's got to go. We don't want him. We don't like what he's doing offensively. It's not Steelers football. So, and he could either die on that ledge and fall on that sword. And you know, as we've seen other coaches have done, because they don't get to have their guys, they leave. And when Tomlin decided, hey, I'd rather coach, technically, I guess it was Tomlin's doing. So there might be a little play of words with here. It's an interesting story. I like the storyline and especially to see him kind of get some bad publicity for a Steelers team that, you know, is Cardinals fans don't like the Steelers. And we just hate the Steelers. They beat us in the Super Bowl. They're as far as a fan base, aside from the continued success they've had over the years, they just, and Von Ben Roethlisberger and the things he did off the field. It's fun to see this stuff, and I love it, you know, especially someone who covers the Cardinals and writes about the Cardinals. This sort of thing is incredibly interesting, but I guess it's probably not that big a deal overall.
Well, after all is said and done, it's really not a big deal, because things have probably worked out the worst for Pittsburgh, right?
Right, and that is the big thing, is because, you know, Arians talking about, oh, we went to 3 Super Bowls, reel him in a little bit. When they went to that first Super Bowl, it was not Arians who was the offensive coordinator. That was Ken Wisenhunt, who, that's kind of the part of the thing where it got Wisenhunt the head coaching job here in Arizona. Now, since after Wisenhunt left, yes, they went to 2 more Super Bowls. And you look at statistically, you've talked about it, Arians is, as much as an offensive guy, as an offensive guru that he is, his offenses were pretty mediocre statistically in Pittsburgh. And as they got further and further away from the Bill Cowher days, they were running the ball less and less, which was not the Steelers' way. And since then, they haven't been to the Super Bowl, but they put up incredible offensive numbers, so it's not like having Todd Haley was a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly. And let's be honest, it worked out better than Bruce Arians could have ever asked for in the end for him. So, I mean, as much as he's upset about it, or maybe his feelings were hurt about it at the time, you know, everything works out if you, you know, do it the right way. And at least that's what I like to lie to myself with. And, and honestly, I mean, it should be almost inspirational, you know, not to get sappy, but I mean, you're talking about a guy that, you know, it was 60 years old till he realized his dream. Like, yeah, he had a nice life and, you know, money and things of that nature aside, he didn't really fulfill his dream until he was 60. So, I mean, why is that a bad thing? You know, that it just took one more, you know, quote unquote failure to actually realize his dream.
And that adversity, he overcame it. I mean, he's eternally grateful for Pagano for giving the job, and he feels, I mean, a little bit guilty to some level that it took Chuck getting very, very sick with cancer to give him the opportunity to show what he could do as a head coach and then give him a health coaching job. And then ultimately it was the betrayal, and then it was cancer that really turned his coaching career. Now he's, you know, he's taken a moribund Arizona Cardinals franchise and turned it into the talk of the NFL with an exciting offense. And he's doing now what he always wanted to do offensively. And it's really kind of fun to see him. He's accomplishing everything offensively he's always wanted to do. It's like finally the perfect situation. He has all the perfect personnel, the smart quarterback, and the scheme and the skill players. And it's worked out really, really well for him. So let's talk next on let's go to wrap up Arians and Tomlin. Let's move on to another topic that's kind of came out in the news. And up next on Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to talk about Jake Long and the possibility for the Arizona Cardinals. We're back on the Rise Up Racy Red podcast, and Jake Long, a guy who was one of the best tackles in the NFL, signed a big deal with the Rams, kind of fell apart physically, and now declared himself completely healthy, ready to play, and he's 100% sure now that he's going to be back in the NFL, which leads to this. Would he make the ideal Steve Keim's one-year type of signing? There was a lot of question around DJ Humphries. I think a bit unfairly. A lot of teams turn over the rookie, a second-year player, and say, okay, it's your job. But because the Cardinals are in potentially a Super Bowl year, growing pains aren't necessarily something they can afford. And so the talk has been, who's going to be that veteran that's kind of signs near training camp? Is it going to be an offensive line? Is it going to be a cornerback? But here we have a guy, and many of the opinion, in fact, I am myself, that what they have on the offensive line is fine, but if they have to dig down into their depth at all, they're going to have a little bit of an issue. So Jake Long, if you could get him on a one-year deal, those one-year Steve Keim specials, minimum salary, maybe with some incentives, do you go after him? Even, you know, is he a guy that you think would be a good match? And I know you wrote a little bit about this, on Revenge of the Birds, so I think you're going to tell me what I think you're going to say.
It's not that I would be against it. I just think that they have a guy on the roster already that could be that backup or that fallback option. And that's just, again, my opinion on this. And I think that Earl Watford showed himself more than capable, you know, I thought he was better than Bobby Massey for a lot of the year last year when he played. And I think, you know, I think that's a good fit. But I do see where your perspective and where you're coming from on this, because I think it is a very, like you said, Steve Keim-like thing to do in July to have him come to have – you know, a Jake Long type come in and really take over the role of right tackle for DJ Humphries, who maybe isn't showing what they want him to show.
And for me, Jake Long for me isn't necessarily who I think is the answer at right tackle. I think he's the answer for their swing tackle, because behind, as of right now, it looks like their swing tackle, the guy who's going to back up the left tackle, right tackle's kind of position. Now, we know Earl Watford can kind of, he can, but say some, heaven forbid, Jared Bill gets hurt, then you're moving DJ Humphrey, still hasn't played a snap in the NFL, from right tackle, where he's only practiced right tackle now for the last year, and you move him over to the left tackle, and you can put Watford in the right tackle, or you go with John Wetzel, who's impressed so far in the offseason, or they've got Rob Chris, but both who are guys who have never played, who have no experience in the league. And so I am of the opinion that it would be very smart to pick up a veteran guy who could be on the bench at least. And the reason why I say Jake Long is the best option, because one, he's coming off an injury, so I don't think he's going to command money other than more than a minimum. He already has sat on the bench, as he appeared in only four games last year for the Falcons. I didn't even know he was on the Falcons. I had no idea. And so he didn't start any games. And I think he's at, it depends on what he wants. If he's intending on going somewhere to start, and that's really what he wants to do, you know, Eugene Monroe, the guy who was just let go by the Ravens, he's kind of gotten his head that he doesn't want to play right tackle. So he's, you know, he doesn't want to play right tackle. Why the Cardinals want him? Because that's the only position they'd really consider in that. But I think Jake Long is the perfect, okay, here's a guy who can push DJ Humphreys. And if Humphreys is not up to snuff, and you have a Jonathan Cooper situation where Coop just isn't getting the job done, they turn it over to Ted Larson. Guess what? Jake Long is a much better bench guy to have replace Humphreys than Ted Larson was to replace Cooper. And so I think he's the perfect match, because if he's willing to come to a winning team to participate in that and be part of that team with the potential to compete and, you know, then be a great insurance policy for both the left tackle and the right tackle. That's what, for me, I think he's perfect. And if he's amenable to it, all of these work out, he'd be the perfect one you're signing. And then that'd be the guy that I would say, yeah, sign him. He's going to be, at minimum, he's going to be the swing backup from left tackle, right tackle. And then I don't have to worry about a John Wetzel potentially being the next Bradley Sal.
But we're always looking for the next Bradley Sal, let's be honest. Let's be honest.
That's an interesting thing. So that's what I like, the idea of Jake Long. I know you think that Earl Watford can handle the job. Now, that's where I can would you trust DJ Humphreys to slide on over the left tackle if Bale Deer got hurt at all, even if it's for a game or two?
I think you have to, because I think you have to, I really do understand where you're coming from. I think part of what happened with Jonathan Cooper, and he talked about it today, I don't know if you read it, the article, Pat's Pulpit had it up, but part of what happened to Jonathan Cooper was a lot of mental, and I don't know if it's the best thing to tell DJ Humphreys, like, look, you know, we like you as a right tackle, but if anything happens on the left side, we don't trust you. So we're going to bring somebody up. That's just, and again, I could be off on that. But that's just my opinion on it. That is what I am concerned with about the move and having it done like that. Again, I don't think it's a bad signing by any means. I just don't see it as necessary.
Now, I personally think the whole talk of DJ Humphrey and worrying about DJ Humphrey or right tackle is way overplayed. I mean, yes, there's concern that he, because of his immaturity, that he, you know, they got to rookie camp, they're like, oh, wait, he's nowhere near ready. They kind of knew that. They wanted him to compete, but they learned more. This isn't Jonathan Cooper. He didn't suffer this broken leg that really set him back, and, you know, that set him back mentally. DJ didn't have that mental setback. In fact, it mentally, you know, it fortified him. It helped him. He's turning, by all means, this is, you know, Jonathan Cooper was always, you know, I'm moving forward. I'm doing the right things. And I know it's on the mental side. And DJ's saying, I'm hungry. I'm an animal. BA turned me into a monster. benching me then, that turned me into a monster. I'm ready to compete. So I'm not that worried. I think he'll be fine because he doesn't have to be an all-pro right tackle. He just has to be okay. I mean, we've seen okay. Bobby Massey, he was okay. He was all right. He wasn't great. There were some games he was really good. There's other games he's kind of not so good. And the Cardinals won 13 games. If DJ Humphries can be Bobby Massey, we're in great shape.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And, you know, one of the things about the offensive line is, and this will be like my last thought on it, is the continuity. And that while Jake Long is beyond versed and beyond a veteran, it's still something that we've seen a lot of people, you know, struggle with. And so, you know, the continuity, as much as you can get, and would be, I think, in my opinion, the best thing for that.
And your point is actually, that's exactly what happened with Eric Winston. Eric Winston, he's had himself a pretty dang good career. He comes to the Cardinals. He replaces Bobby Massey in 2013. Winston by no means was great. He definitely struggled, and he was kind of one of the players. I mean, that right side of the offensive line was a struggle. You got Paul Fanica, and you've got, well, I guess it was Darren College that year. Nope, I guess it was Fanica. It had Fanica on.
It was Fanica because it was after College had left.
Yeah,
it was,
yeah.
And it was they had to move. I think it was Larson to the left side. Larson was going to start on the right side.
That was a season later because it was 2013 was the first year, but I think it was still – who was the right guard that year? Anyway, I think it was Fanica. I think it was – forget it. I'm not going to – but Winston came in as, you know, first day of training camp, and he didn't play. Now, he revealed later he played hurt pretty much all year, but he wasn't great. So there's definitely that option. That's why, you know, I would love to see Long brought in as depth competition. Yeah. I don't necessarily want him to start. I want DJ to start, and I want him to be good, and I want him to be solid.
And you were right. You shouldn't have doubted yourself. It was Darren College slated to start at right guard until DJ got hurt, and then he had to move back over to left guard.
That's right.
So Jonathan got hurt. Freudian slip. So
Cooper got hurt. College goes back to left guard,
and then Fanica starts.
Fanica,
yeah, and he got a contract after.
Yeah,
amazingly. I mean, good for him.
Yes. Let's move on from there. Let's talk about the top 100. Is, you know, we already knew Calais Campbell came in at number 71. Chandler Jones came in at number 48, and then on Wednesday night, the NFL Network released its 30-21. Larry Fitzgerald and Tyrann Mathieu come into there, and Tyrann Mathieu number 28, Larry Fitzgerald number 27. I don't know about you. There's really nothing I can do to argue their place. I consider that good. I think Mathieu will ascend, but considering he's coming back from the injury, I think it's right about right, and Fitz as well. I mean, they're definitely, I think, 20-something players better than they are, especially when you factor in Matthew's injury. And Fitz, he's just awesome.
You know, and I said earlier, and I tweeted this out, I'm fine with the ranking. I understand, and it's likely, like you said, because of the injury that Mathieu sustained. But in fairness and in, you know, in terms of equality across the board, how then is Todd Gurley ranked at 22 and Tyrann Mathieu ranked at 28? That would be my only question, because I'm fine with the Mathieu ranking except for Gurley, and not because obviously Todd Gurley is a fantastic player. You know, we talked about it last year on the podcast. I wrote about it last year. You know, if for some reason he would have fallen to 24, I would have ran the card up to the podium to draft him. That's how much I think of him. And, you know, he was fantastic last year for the Rams, but, you know, if everything's equal and they both played 14 games, I believe it was only 14 games Gurley played in. Can you really say that in his 14 games, Gurley was better? Because I think the fact that the Rams, you know, I think they went 1-1 in games he didn't play, and the Cardinals, you know, the defense struggled after Matthew got hurt. So I don't know. That's just my, that was my one complaint, you know, and like you said, Fitz is awesome and, you know, deserved it 110%. And, you know, the only thing that can be right for Fitz, and I'm not a sentimental type because, you know, it's their job and they get paid very well to do it. And also, you know, everybody's out here trying to win a ring, but I would love to see Fitz go out on top, not just at, you know, not even as a Cardinals fan, just in general, you would love to see Larry Fitzgerald go out on top. And so I think that's the only thing that could be done to kind of, complete his legacy for him, if you would.
That would be perfect. And this is hopefully the year that that happens. Now, there's 20 play. There are 20 players left to reveal numbers 20 through 1 through 20. We know that Patrick Peterson's going to be in that group. Not only he was number 19 a year ago, and that was coming off of a season in which he struggled. He wasn't that good, but he still had the admiration of his fellow NFLers to put him in the top 20. So we know Patrick Peterson's going to be in the top 20, and he played fantastically this past season. Which leaves us to the question is, will Carson Palmer be part of that group? If we look at some of the quarterbacks that have already been revealed, Ben Roethlisberger, Drew Brees, some of these quarterbacks have already been there, and we look at Carson Palmer, now, you know, his career, he has yet to appear. Well, granted, they didn't start this till 2011, and by then he was a Raider, or he was still in the middle of his that ugly part of his career where he gave up on the Bengals and he lost sort of.
He was viewed as a kind of a baby. He was viewed as a baby and a quitter. I mean, but that's just what it was. It's unfortunate that that's what it was, but that's how he was viewed by everybody. Honestly, I mean, all, you know, both sides of the coin in terms of other players and then fans as well. You know, those around the league, I should say, and fans as well.
And so the question is, after the season that he had, you know, 4,600 yards, 35 touchdowns, only 11 interceptions, the 13 wins. He played fantastically. Pro Football Focus has been all about Carson Palmer for the last year, and with reason, because instead of excelling at a dink and dunk offense, he was excelling at a much greater degree of difficulty with intermediate and deep downfield throws, and he was doing very well. The question is, if he's going to be in the top 100, should he be in the top 100? And if he's going to be, could he really go from not being in the top 100 at all ever to being a top 20 player? I say he deserves it. Based on the way he plays, I think it kind of led up. I think at this point, based on the quarterbacks that are remaining, the quarterbacks that have already been mentioned, I think he has to be in that top 20. I'm interested to see what it is. What's your case? I mean, it would seem that you wouldn't see a player make that much of an ascension from not being mentioned at all to in the top 20. But I think Palmer has to be, doesn't he? What's your take on that?
You know, I went back and forth, and you know, we talked about it earlier, but I think I would be more upset if Patrick Peterson wasn't on the list than Carson Palmer not being on the list. And I think the reason why Palmer not being on the list because he's never been on the list, so therefore maybe his peers, and let's, you know, be honest, there's something that came out today that it was like 46% of NFL players voted on this thing, so it's not like it's even, you know, half the eligible voters voted, but you know, if his peers said, well, we want to see you do it again, I could get behind that more than I could, well, Patrick didn't make it this year. You know what I'm saying? But all right. things being considered, because it is specifically a list of 2015, it's hard to leave him off the list. And so that's where I would be, you know, head scratching. I think he'll make it. I would understand if he didn't, only because of the fact that he's never made it before. So maybe his peers say, I want to see it, you know, again from you. But that's, you know, that's the only thing that really would make sense. So I you know, I don't know. What's your thought?
Well, you know, I understand that. I could see it not happening, and it would perplex me. I would understand why he's not on the list, because it would just seem like it would seem too much to go from not at all to a top 20 or even a top 10 player, which, you know, based on the way he played, he might creep into the top 10. It's possible. He was
it
in the MVP.
Absolutely is. What?
Because he was an MVP candidate last year for right up till the very end. He was the talk of the NFL. You know, people were talking about Carson Palmer as an elite quarterback. It was in the media. He was a Pro Bowler. He made the Pro Bowl, and that part of that is his peers and his coaches. And so you can tell that he's getting respect there. And then you just look at, you know, I think Carson Palmer has a, you know, a cachet of respect from the early years in Cincinnati that he sort of lost. Because had they done this 10 years ago, he would have been on those lists, because he was on the precipice of becoming one of the most elite, one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL before that knee injury. After that, things fell apart. And then he had the whole, you know, quitting and going home, getting traded to the Raiders, playing for the Raiders, then coming to Arizona where everything kind of turned around the second half of 2013. So the progression has kind of been there. Yes, he had the 22 interceptions in 2013, and he was hurt in 2014, but he played very effectively. And then to build on that, to come back and to be one of the top quarterbacks, you know, one of the top three, four quarterbacks in the NFL, you know, I think he has to be there. I understand why he's not, but it, at this point, I would have thought he would have been much lower. I thought he'd probably be in the 30s. But, you know, I expect him to be in there.
I think that's what the hard thing for me is. I guess because it is technically supposed to be a list from 2015, right? Like, that's how they kind of present it, is it not?
I think, you know, they say it's the top 100 players of 2016, so I don't know if they're looking ahead who's going to be better, what they're basing it right now, looking at the next season, or if it's based on how they did last year. I don't know. It's some way, and it's players voting, supposedly. So,
Yeah, so, but like I said, so any way you look at it, if we're talking about this year or, you know, last year, you have to give him credit. And so, you know, but I'm with you. I was expecting more of like a top 50, you know, top between 30 and 50 type number.
Yeah.
Not a top 20 number. So that's where the worry comes in, that maybe he just isn't going to make it this year.
What's probably going to happen, he's going to be number 20. This is probably what's going to happen. He's going to be the next player that they show. And if that's their, okay, that's cool. With the year that he had, I think that would be reasonable. Where do you think he's going to, let's assume that he's in. Where do you think he gets ranked? Quarterbacks always tend to get a little special, extra special treatment, but he hasn't been there before. I think he'll probably be right there about number 20, between 18 and 20. That's my guess.
Yeah, I was going to say 15 to 20. Like, if he's in the top 15, I mean, I'll be happy, but I'm going to be astonished, because that is, like you said, that's a massive jump to go from, you know, even if you say he was 101 last year, to 15.
That's incredible. It's incredible. So let's move on. Well, in our last segment here on Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to move on from Carson Palmer. We're going to talk about 53-man roster predictions. It's way too early. That's okay, but we're just going to talk about a little bit. So basically, the idea is who's going to make it, who's the veteran, that sort of thing. So coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, 53-man roster projections. And now we're back on Rise Up Sea Red, the podcast with a new name, show number 120 overall. And Seth and I have put together our early, way too early, roster predictions for the Arizona Cardinals roster. We're seeing a few of those pop up everywhere. Seth, what about today? I've actually saving my wrote it on Wednesday, and I have mine saved for when I attach this podcast to it. I'll have it'll publish on Thursday, and so by the time you're listening to this, you'll probably have already seen it. Or if you haven't seen it, make sure you go to cardswire.usatoday.com and do see it. So let's talk about the three-man rosters. Do you think do you think there's any big surprise? Do you have any hot takes on did your roster have any hot takes in there?
I didn't actually do a roster per se. I took Josh Weinfuss's roster critiqued what he said because some of it was not good. shouts to Josh Weinfuss. Very nice guy. but so I think, and I wrote about this for a future column, spoiler alert. So I did have five kind of hottish takes on guys that could not make the roster that I think would surprise people. And so we'll go through it as we go. But I think the biggest name to kind of watch, there's two big names to watch, in my opinion. Alex Okafor and Frosty Rucker. Those are the two biggest names. And I say that because they're the two biggest contracts at positions where there are a lot of players that are just as good, but a lot cheaper. And so I think those could be like the two biggest names that get dropped. The other one, and we can talk about it starting off with the quarterbacks, is if they need to make a roster move, or if they feel like Tyrann Mathieu's not 100%, so they need to keep an extra defensive back, because let's remember, they use Tyrann as a corner and a safe. So, you know, they basically need two players to fill his role. I could see them cutting Matt Barkley and not in favor of Jake Coker, just because they need the space and they're going to, you know, what I wrote and, you know, what I'll say is Steve Keim is deft at understanding the value of his own players. We saw it with literally every single player he's let test free agency that you and I or any pundit was like, whoa, I can't believe they're letting this guy test free agency. And outside of Carlos Dansby, it really hasn't bitten them at all.
No, pretty much everyone was planned. Dansby, they expected as well, but what bit them in the butt was that other guy. Was supposed to be there. That other guy. We're not going to talk about him. We're not going to mention his name because then fans come creeping out of the woodwork asking about him. So yes. So in your roster, do you see Barkley making the team?
You know, for right now, I do, because we're all assuming that Tyrann Mathieu is, you know, going to be 85%+ when the season starts and not having to be nursed back into a position at either, you know, at that slot corner or as a free safety.
For me, Barkley was a lock for me. I can see a scenario. I see a scenario here in which Barkley doesn't make the team, but I don't think it would be Jake Coker on the active roster. I think it would be Jake Coker on the practice squad. And unfortunately, Jake Coker fans, if there are any of you out there, if Barkley makes the team, Coker's not on the roster at all. That includes practice squad. I do not see any scenario in which there are four quarterbacks on the roster, because already, even with three quarterbacks on the roster, that third guy gets no snaps at all. And my reasoning is this: just like last year, they saw what happened in 2014. So they want a guy who's not a rookie to be there, who has been there for the whole season and knows the offense. So if the worst happens, if Palmer and Stanton gets hurt, that Barkley could manage the situation. I don't see them trusting Coker to do that. So I could see them going with two quarterbacks and Coker on the roster, but because of the particular situation this year where they're going Super Bowl bound, Super Bowl or bust, Barkley they're going to have on the roster, because if the worst comes to worst, they trust Barkley more than they would Jake Coker, who has no clue what he's doing still yet.
Right, and so that's my idea as well. The only reason, like I said, that I could see them cutting him is that Keim knows what his player's value is. So if he knows that he's not only going to clear waivers, but he's not going to get picked up and put on an active roster, that's a very Keim-like move, in my opinion, to say, all right, we're going to let you go, you know, work out in California or sit on Denver's practice squad or whatever, you know, on a team's practice squad, while Jake Coker gets those 2% reps. And if, you know, God forbid anything happens, we'll just sign you and not worry about it. Cause we don't worry about anybody picking you up. That's what I said. That is something that I could 100% see Keim doing once he establishes Barkley's value.
Yeah, Barkley's value. He's the quarterback of the future, don't you know? No, he's not. Running back, for me, there's no surprises here. It's going to be David Johnson, Chris Jones, Andre Ellington, and Stephon Taylor. Stephon Taylor, I'm going to hold true to the fact that they need his special teams play, and he's the best pass-blocking running back they have on the roster. And guess what? Bruce Arians is going to keep him for one more year. Now, do I see a situation if one of these other guys, if a Kerwin Williams or an Elijah Penny, if they can – because Andre Ellington is a third running back who doesn't play special teams, although he has gotten some kickoff reps in practice. I did notice that in part of the open part of minicamp, he was taking kickoff return reps. We might see him on special teams this year. He's making almost $1.7 million to be a third running back. That maybe they can afford that, but I can see that be a salary cutting measure. So I don't think there's any surprise there. I think Taylor's the number four, and I think he's a lock.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that 100%. And I mean, we can even roll that right into the wide receivers: Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd, John Brown, J.J. Nelson, Jerron Brown. The question becomes, do they keep Britton Golden or do they let him go? And, you know, do they only carry five wide receivers? And I think that ties into the tight ends, but also Andre Ellington. I think there's a lot of dominoes in if they do cut Britton Golden, because I think they have to keep Andre Ellington. And I think that Ifeanyi Moma has to make the roster, and because both of those guys can line up as slot type wide receivers in a pinch. Whereas, you know, if they don't have Britton Golden, then they only have five receivers. And then, you know, God forbid something happens, they need to have that fifth receiver for special sets. That would be the only way Britton Golden makes the roster, if they're worried about injuries or something of that nature. But I don't think Britton makes the roster this year.
I actually have the two surprises there. I don't have Golden make the roster. I don't even have Jerron Brown making the roster. And that's not so much an indictment on Jerron Brown, but I think it has to do with some of the other players that they added. Jerron Brown. I have Fitz, I have John Brown, I have Michael Floyd, I have J.J. Nelson. And then the fifth receiver I have is Jackson Shipley. Jerron Brown is a guy who they brought back on a restricted free agent tender, and so he's going to be making about $1.7 million as a fifth receiver. That's really pricey, in my opinion. And while he is really good as a gunner opposite Justin Bethel, who do they happen to pick up in the draft? They have some guys that they expect to be impact guys on special teams. Brandon Williams for one, Marquis Christian two. I believe some of their undrafted guys they see making significant impact on special teams. So I think his value is diminished, and at the salary, I think that becomes one of those salary shaving things. And Jackson Shipley, who can play special teams, and offers a little bit different element as a receiver. I think he becomes the number five guy.
And I could see that. They liked Jackson. They kept him around last year on the practice squad, right? He was on the practice squad all year. So, yeah, I could see that happening as well. You know, I just think, again, for continuity's sake, I think they stay with what they're doing. But that's just, you know, that's my thought.
And so look at the tight ends. I went boring. I went Gresham, Fells, Nicholas, and MoMa. And I could see perhaps MoMa not making it if there's the potential where he doesn't come all the way back from his knee injury. And I could see Gerald Christian snicking in or maybe even Hakeem Vallis, their undrafted guy, because he is sort of the same. He might not have the elite speed. He was a receiver in college. He's a converted receiver in college to tight end. He's now 260 pounds, so it's kind of the same thing. He's not quite as tall as MoMa. I think he's 6'5 instead of 6'7. Gresham and Fells are locks. Nicholas, you know, yeah, I think the team still likes him because he still offers things. He's got to stay healthy. But I think it's going to be those four with MoMa. I think it'll be MoMa because they were really, really intrigued about what he could do and the packages he could be in.
And I think the biggest thing that could happen here is Troy Nicholas gets cut. And that's because Jermaine Gresham fills the blocking role. You just spelled out their love of MoMa. And they liked Gerald Christian last year.
Gerald Christian. And the one thing that he offers, because he's not the traditional tight end size, but he's their H-back guy. So he's the guy that they'd line up in the backfield, as the fullback, as that H-back and moving around. So that there is that possibility as well. I can see that. I think
what it is with Nicholas, and this is what I wrote, why he could be one of the five guys, you know, that's a surprise cut, is because Bruce Arians hates guys that are, you know, have the nagging injuries. He hates that. I mean, we saw it with Jonathan Cooper, we saw it with Sean Weatherspoon. Heck, we saw it with Andre Ellington. I mean, Andre Ellington was running back three after they were going to build their offense around him last year, or in 2014.
Correct.
So, you know, he is not a fan of guys that are, you know, quote-unquote injured. He's fine if you're hurt, if you're actually hurt, but these little nagging injuries, he just, you know, and that's been Troy's MO since he got drafted. And so, you know, like you said, MoMa and Christian, both guys that got actually, you know, knocked out and were gone for a season. If they're back healthy, that could be the one thing that swings that way, but I'm not counting on it, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Offensive line, I went with actually 9 on the roster. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So yeah, I went with 9 offensive linemen on the roster for this reason. I believe Evan Bame, unless things change, he will probably be this year's DJ Humphries and Jonathan Cooper. I think they look at him as a year ahead, kind of a year ahead from now. But I think he's the guy, because of his lack of flexibility, becomes the guy that they leave inactive. So I've got the starting five: Veldier, Upati, AQ Shipley, Evan Mathis, DJ Humphries. Those five. Then I'm looking and building. You've got Bame. You're going to keep him on the roster. Or Watford, he's a lock because he can play everywhere. And then I have them going with Antoine McClain, a guy that for some reason or another they really like. And I think he ends up being the swing guard. And then I have one of two things here. And I'm gonna say there's gonna be a veteran. Like I initially put that Wetzel will get the job. It might be Rob Chris. I can say they're gonna have a veteran. I think they're gonna bring in a veteran swing tackle, whoever that is. So I think they're gonna go with 9. That's kind of been the thing they've done the last few years. They've gone with 9 offensive linemen. And as much as they say they want to only dress 7, I haven't gone back in the game books, but I think in 3 seasons, I don't think they've ever dressed only 7. And so I see them keeping on the bench. So you've got Watford, who's basically the backup center guard and right tackle. You bring in the vet, whoever that is, Jake Long, for example, to be the backup left tackle. And you've got McClain, who can play the guard positions, and Bame is your inactive.
And I would say it's the starters, obviously, and I think your bench is going to be Bame, Watford, Toner, and then that Cole Toner, and then that that veteran that you just talked about. I think, like you said, I think they get a veteran to be the ninth, and I think Toner's and or I think Bane's the inactive one until, you know, an injury occurs.
So someone
like
gets
Shipley, yeah. So.
And so you have Cole, you've got Toner over McLean is what you have. For me, Toner's been the wild card. He's the draft pick. I was like, why in the world did they draft him? Because, you know, he dominated in the Ivy League, but he didn't show all that great in Senior Bowl. And he played tackle, but they kind of project him a guard. I mean, you believe I think they stash him in the offense. And I think he's a practice squad guy and then becomes next year's Earl Watford. That's my thing. I told you that. And he's the guy that I don't think he's going to make this team.
And I could see that, but I think they like him too much to try to stash him. So I think it's going to end up being, he's going to make the team. And like you said, he'll end up either replacing Earl Watford once Watford goes to another team, or he'll replace Earl Watford once Watford becomes a starter on the offensive line.
That's very possible. So, did you go so far? For me, that's 25 men on offense. Did you go with 25 men on the offensive side of the ball?
I did.
Okay, so we're going to be looking at 25 on both sides of the ball and the three specialists. Defensive line, the odd man out I have here. Oh, I completely forgot about that guy. So, this is tough because there's a player I forgot. So right now, I put in Frosty Rucker, Corey Peters, Calais Campbell, Robert Kendici, Rodney Gunter, Xavier Williams, and Josh Morrow, leaving out Red Bryant. However, Ed Stinson, he's a guy that's been getting significant reps in practice. So I have to figure Stinson's going to be in there somewhere. As oddly, and you know, he's been kind of productive. He's kind of, so if Stinson's not on the team, or if he does make the team, then I have to make a decision between Frosty Rucker and Xavier Williams. I already let Red Bryant go, so I don't think they let Rucker go. So I think it's going to be either Stinson or Xavier Williams. So that's my caveat, because I forgot about him. Frosty Rucker, Corey Peters, Calais Campbell, those are your potential starters. You got Kendici, Gunter, Josh Morrow, who's super, super versatile. And then they're either going to have Ed Stinson or Xavier Williams as that other backup. And I think Xavier Williams becomes a little bit more expendable because Corey Peters will play the nose. And then if they need a backup, well, they've got Gunter, and they've got a number of guys who can play the nose. And he's the one guy who only plays one position.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you on that. Red Bryant isn't going to make this roster, I think. And like I said, I could see them cutting Frosty when all is said and done, if they need the extra money, or if they want to, you know, if they want to, or bring in a free agent, you know, like a la Jake Long.
I think
on his $1.5 million type stuff.
And I think the only way that Rucker gets cut is if Bryant stays, because then that gives them two veterans on the essential solid veterans on the roster out that one other than Calais Campbell. And I think you need a guy on the reserves that is kind of got the same role that Corey Redding had a year ago, and Vonnie Holiday did before that, and just all those veteran guys. So it's either going to be Frosty Rucker, who is an important guy on that team, a very, very big leader on that team, or Red Bryant. If Red Bryant's not on the team, I think Rucker stays. And if Bryant does, and I think that's where Rucker becomes expendable.
Are we thinking at all Corey Peters gets cut or no?
I don't think so. I didn't even give that any thought. I don't see them cutting him just after the one season unless he just isn't right.
Yeah.
Well, even not so much getting hurt, but he just doesn't look right.
When you look at the linebacker core, you have your starters of Golden, Here's the issue. Do you put Buchanan as a linebacker or do you
lift him as a safety? I lifted him into safety, and that's where, you know, when I look at the inside linebacker, so of the true inside linebackers, I only keep three because I'm essentially using Buchanan in the inside linebacker depth. But I only kept three inside linebackers.
So you have at outside linebacker, you have Marcus Golden and Chandler Jones.
And then I go Okafor, Kareem Martin, and Dwight Freeney. I think Dwight Freeney will ultimately be back. They say I think Okpalaugo doesn't make the roster, and I think Shaq Riddick will get cut because there's just no room for him.
See, and that's why I think that you could see Okafor getting cut here. Did you know he was a $1.7 million cap hit? I didn't even know that until I looked it up today.
That's a lot. He got that in that incentive for that there. That's one of those new things in this CBA. If you know, I think it's like the third position. You outplay, you'll get certain amount. Then you essentially get the restricted free agent in your fourth year. You get the restricted free agent salary. And yes, but that's the thing. If you don't have Okafor, as much, you know, he wasn't productive last year, but then you're still left with a lot of unproven stuff. And that's why I think Okafor will still be there. I think Freeney will be there. I think they're going to bring back Freeney, and then they're going to go with Kareem Martin because of what he does on some special teams. That's how I see that goes. And I see Martin over Riddick for that reason, because Martin is an established commodity on special teams.
See, and I think that they could let go of Okafor if they bring back a Dwight Freeney, because then they have that depth of, you know, that veteran depth. Whereas, you know, Martin, Riddick, all those other guys are basically the same player in terms of on the field, on the defense right now. The only unknown is obviously Akpulaga. So,
and Okafor isn't now salary wise, he could go, but he does play on special teams as well, or can play in special teams. And so that's the thing, you bring in Freeney, you need to have guys playing special teams because he's not even going to play that much on defense and certainly not going to run up and down the field on kickoff.
No, he won't. So, but yeah, he's another one of those interesting cuts because I don't think he endeared himself very much to the team either with his "I got hurt" before the playoffs started. So,
but the potential production is still there, especially if you need depth. He's a guy you can put out there for an extended period of time, and I think he's still a better option out there if Golden or Jones has to miss a game. Golden Okafor pairing or Jones Okafor pairing is better than having full-time Freeney, which he wouldn't be, or when you have Kareem Martin out there. And so I think that his value is still there as a pass rusher because we've seen him produce, and I think he is a better option. And we saw the drop off when he was out and we had Kareem Martin in the game, that the pass rush was anemic even before, was even less.
And then on the inside linebackers, we're just keeping three. Is that what you had?
Yep. Minter Fua and Gabe Martin.
Yeah. I don't even know who the other inside linebackers on the roster are right now. Not counting, you know, Buchanan as one. So the defensive backs are interesting too to me because you don't like when you put it on paper, it's not necessarily an impressive group, right? Because you have Patrick, Deion, and Tyran, but then after that, you have a lot of journeymen. You have a guy in Tony Jefferson who didn't get a sniff from any other team in the NFL. Obviously, the journeyman I was talking about was Tyvon Branch. And then you have a lot of just unknowns. Brandon Williams, obviously, the third-round pick this year. If he doesn't make the roster, that's going to be a dumpster fire. You have Justin Bethel, who most fans want replaced already after, you know, what, five starts or four starts in his career. And then you have Kariel Brooks. Is he going to make the roster over Marquis Christian? Is he going to make the roster over Eli Buka? Like that's where I'm at with this defensive back. Like, you know, the five or six, right? I think it's six that are going to be on the roster. but who's the depth? And you drafted, you know, three defensive backs. Do all three of them make the roster?
I think they do. I think they think highly enough of all three of those guys that they will be there. So this is where I have the cornerbacks. I actually have 10 defensive backs if you include Buchanan. If we count out Buchanan, he becomes a – I listed him at the safety because that's how he's listed, but essentially he's my fourth inside linebacker. If that's the case, I've got five corners and four safeties if we exclude Buchanan. I go with Bethel. I went Peterson, Bethel, Brandon Williams. I think Harlan Miller makes the roster. And then for me, it's a toss-up between, you know, Kerryl Brooks, Eli Buka, and then Leon Hall, if he gets signed, or some veteran they bring in. Now, they do have a couple of veteran guys or experienced guys that they signed that were basically they were without a team. So you've got Sean Prater and you got Asa Jackson. Those are the possibility there because you get some leadership there, some experience. But ultimately, I think they're going to go with athleticism. And so if Buka is in fact, if he's in fact back to, I think he's, he said, I think his agent told me weeks ago he was at 90%. He started doing some individual works out. So if he impresses in pads, and especially because I think he's going to be able to make at least an impression on special teams, he was recently on an interview on Duggan Wolf, and he said one of the things that endeared himself to the Cardinals, they had a plan for him. So I don't know if that plan was, hey, he's going to be on the practice squad or he's going to be at the back end of the roster if he shows what he can do. So I'm going to put Peterson, Bethel, Brandon Williams, Harlan Miller. I think he's going to make it. I think that his cover skills are impressive enough. He's got to stay healthy. And then I think it's going to be Eli Buka as opposed to Kerryl Brooks. The only possible thing there is would be different is if they add a veteran. And we'll see about Leon Hall. And then at safety. And this is where I'm not nearly as worried about, you know, replacing Matthew because he's essentially, you have to replace him with two. That's not actually true this year because of Tyvon Branch. And this is what I've seen so far. Tyvon Branch is playing Tyvon Branch has been playing the Tyrann Mathieu role. And so he is the guy that he's playing in the slot. Now, what I've seen so far, DJ Swearinger is getting significant playing time in practice, getting significant reps, but this is how I have the safeties going. I don't think DJ Swearinger makes the roster. I think ultimately we're going to go with Tony Jefferson and Tyvon Branch as your starters. Then Tyrann Mathieu behind him, Marquis Christian, and then of course Bedeon Buchanan. And here was where we've got some flexibility. Marquis Christian could do that role. Now I could see. And this is where I'd have to move somebody else, and that might be on the offensive line, or it might be at receiver. Is I forgot, you know, if Matthew's not ready to play, then I think they're going to keep Swearinger, or maybe Christian shows up enough because Christian kind of is that guy. He's built like DJ Swearinger, and he also has if you listen to some of the people talk about Christian, they're really excited about him. So he could play that Badger role early. And so I'm not necessarily as worried about it. I think we're going to, at least if Matthew is healthy and they can have him play at least the safety role instead of in the slot, Branch can slide down and do that there. But they have Marquis Christian doing a lot of things right now. So I think they go with him. So Jefferson, Branch, Matthew, and Christian with Deion Buchanan. As the safety in name only.
I can get behind that. I honestly, I'm not as high on Branch as you guys are simply because I watched him play and he's not on the field enough that you can trust him to be, you know, that replacement for Matthew all the time. So, but I see exactly where you guys are coming from and what you guys or what you're saying. And I can't really argue it much. That's what I said. The defensive backs are so hard for me because I just have no idea where Tyrann's at and how they're going to compensate if they have to.
And you go to the specialists. You basically lawn slappers flip a coin the way I've heard a few people talk, I think Daniel Dillon, as opposed to Cam Kanaday, I think he might have a little bit of an edge, but that's going to be a competition nobody knows at all. We're not going to be able to, in training camp, in preseason games, we're not, I mean, unless you pay attention to special teams, unless you have a stopwatch, you're really not going to know. That's just going to be one that just happens. So it's either going to be Kanaday or Dillon, and Chandler Catanzaro is a lock. Now, the one guy that, you know, maybe a wild card, but keep an eye on Garrett Swanson. Maybe he makes it over Drew Butler, but I still think Drew Butler is going to be the guy there.
Yeah, I agree, because Bruce Arians likes him too much. So
he's an Amos Jones guy. He's yeah. a guy that Amos Jones is going to, you know, fall on the sword on. And this is, I've heard this multiple times, is that they continue to praise Butler and talk about how good he's played, because I think they pin a lot of the problems they've had in the punt game onto their coverage team.
Yeah, the coverage. I've heard that as well. I don't agree, but I've heard that as well.
It's like, how can you complain about the coverage when you got Justin Bethel and Jerron Brown running on the field? Come on.
Exactly. So, but yeah, I think that, I mean, that's, like I said, doing a 53-man roster right now is an exercise in futility, simply because you and I,
we haven't seen anybody in pads.
Well, no, not just that. We're bandying it about, and it is that, you know, is Jake Long going to be on the roster? Is Leon Hall going to be on the roster? Like,
Greeny.
Yeah, who are the veterans that are going to get picked up in between now and then, and how does it, you know, what's the ripple effect on the roster? Obviously, I'd love to see Marquis Christian make the roster, Harlan Miller, you know, make the roster, because I'd love to see those guys play. Cole Toner, you know, you want your draft picks to make the roster, because that's how you build so well, is continuing to draft well and getting, you know, young talent in there. So,
well, that should wrap up our Rise Up See Red podcast for this episode. This might be the last one until our pre-training camp one, which would likely come, you know, in about a month. But if something else comes up, we might have a show or two, or maybe I can pick up a player interview or two, and maybe won't fall through this next time. But thank you for listening. The Rise Up See Red podcast is found on Blog Talk Radio. You'll be able to find on Revenge of the Birds and on Cards Wire on USA Today's sites. On Twitter, it's at Rise Up See Red. On Facebook as well, Rise Up See Red. And you can hit us up on Twitter as well. That's Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. And I am from Cards Wire of USA Today's sites. Thank you for listening. Go Cardinals.
Have a good night, everybody.